Final hour, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Paul Kuharski, Nick Kieser here with you on this Wednesday morning. Tennessee hosting Florida coming up on Saturday in Neyland Stadium. And to help us talk more about that, we go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And welcome in our friend Adam Sparks from the Knoxville News Sentinel. Adam, good morning. How you doing?
Pretty good, guys. The sun came out in Arkansas the other day. It's come out every day since then. Although if you walk around Knoxville right now, you may think it hasn't. But they have another game to play this week.
They do. There's no doubt about that. And within a seven-day span, taking on Florida and Alabama. So we'll see how that goes. The city may burn down at the end of that. Let's start on the Arkansas game. Obviously, it's an incredibly disappointing result for Tennessee. The offense just could not get anything going. Defense, even though they only gave up 19 points, it was just tough on them to stop Arkansas's offense that night. So I want to start on the passing game, Adam. What's your concern level with what we're seeing, or maybe more specifically what we're not seeing from the passing game right now, whether that's from a protection standpoint, an execution down the field? What do you make of the lack of production right now in the passing game?
For one, I think things were a little too easy early on. If you go back and look at the Chattanooga game, the Kent State game, you know, those blowouts, Nico sat in a clean pocket. He threw the ball downfield. They could, because of the opponents they were playing, you could have slow developing deep routes. I mean, they would, you know, throw in a whole lot of like deep slants, 17, 18 yard square ends, these sort of things, and they don't have the pass protection to do that. And also, I think Nico saw how easy that was, and once he got into a game where those just weren't there, he would not look to check downs. I mean, I don't think so much of this shows in the TV broadcast, but live from the press box, you would see a few intermediate routes that were open for a split second. Nico did not look at them. He looks deep. That's where he's had success early in the season. They're going to have to drill into him to settle for a six-yard pass to a running back or an eight-yard pass to a tight end or whatever. That's some of it. The biggest part of it is just protection. You know, Nico was confused by what he was seeing. This is two games in a row they've been bad on offense, and both of them, Oklahoma and Arkansas, introduced new defenses, three-man fronts, which they had not shown on film. Nico's been confused by them. It's not something he had, you know, seen in high school. You're a five-star guy, but you don't see that necessarily. You don't see complex defenses. They've disguised a whole lot pre-snap. Opponents have looked at Nico and thought, that is five-star talent, but the vulnerability that he has is his inexperience. And so they've done a good job of disguising things pre-snap. And his offensive line has not helped him, and especially both tackles. So it's a little bit of everything. I think offensive line is the biggest issue. But I put more of this in retrospect on the coaches because they should know what Nico can and can't do at this point, and they should know where their vulnerabilities are on the offensive line. And they just didn't do anything in the game the other night to help either of those problems.
Where do you think the biggest adjustment is called for by them? And what do you expect the adjustment to be now?
Two tight ends. You know, they have three good tight ends. In the NC State game, they went to a 12 personnel to run it back and two tight ends, and that worked very well. So Josh Heupel has shown in that game, and the fact that he was pretty conservative in the Oklahoma game, that he doesn't mind getting outside of his primary philosophy. You know, his philosophy is spread everybody out, throw to the sidelines, and then use that space to run the ball against a light box. And because of the confusion that's going on in the pre-snap disguises, the box is not being clear how many players are in the box, how many defenders are in the box. So they need to just simplify it, go with two tight ends, run the ball. It's the simplest game plan right now. I think it's the easiest on Nico. It gives him fewer reads, things closer to the line of scrimmage. It doesn't take advantage of his arm strength, but you just need to win games at this point. And the one guy they can count on is Dylan Sampson. Light box, heavy box, whatever. He's averaging over 6 yards a carry. He's averaging over 10 yards a catch. Just get him the ball a whole lot, and and keep things tight in the middle of the field.
Adam, do you think the receivers are doing a good enough job of creating separation? How would you evaluate the way that they've played? And do you think there's a chance that just given the raw ability that he has, that Mike Matthews finds his way more into the conversation at some point?
I mean, Matthews could. A lot of people, I mean, this is one of those people get in love with that five-star grade. And he's a very good receiver. I think we'll see more of him this week because I'm a little skeptical that Brew McCoy and Squirrel White will be able to go. They both had pretty nasty injuries the other night. Even if they do go, they may be limited. I mean, Matthews played 14 snaps the other night, and I don't know that he ever got open, but he never was targeted, and I think he would have been if he was open. I mean, a lot of the wide receivers had some issues. I mean, I even said it in the preseason. This wide receiving core is maybe the deepest that Josh Heupel's had, but like, there's not a number one. There's some number twos and some number threes. So there, I don't think there's necessarily a receiver that, you know, that just terrifies opponents. It's more so the scheme does. And if there's space, they'll exploit it, but they just haven't had space. And I think defenses have been perfectly fine with giving up underneath routes because of that, because they don't think there's receivers necessarily that can, you know, that can just beat them on one-on-ones. And so far that's been the case.
So in the transfer portal era, Tennessee hasn't really become a destination for wide receivers. They're not special to position, like you just said, despite the attractive offenses. So what's the deal with that?
Well, I mean, so like Dante Thornton has been – he's had a number of big plays. He's been their most productive guy, averaging 30-something yards a catch, three touchdowns. He just hadn't done it that much. He's a guy that they got in the portal a year ago out of Oregon. Looked like he'd flamed out. Instead, he's had a good second year. Chris Brazel, the Tulane transfer they got this year, has not really hit yet. So I think there's an argument that maybe it takes more than a year, especially in this offense. I think Tennessee is it can sometimes be a draw on offense to transfers because it's very productive. You know, transfers look at that and say, I want to be a part of it. But then once they get in it, it's the tempo is difficult. The offense is a hard adjustment. I mean, even if you look on the offensive line, their two biggest issues in the offensive line are their left tackle and the right tackle. They're both transfers, especially the left tackle, LSU transfer, Lance Hurd, five-star. He left LSU because there are two NFL tackles in front of him, so he couldn't get on the field, and came here and the tempo is tough to adjust to. He was out of shape because he's been injured and out for about a month, and it's just hard to catch up in that way. So Tennessee's been pretty good at getting players into the portal, but few of them have hit immediately. It usually takes time.
Adam, on the defensive side of things, was Saturday night maybe a wake-up call for the secondary? Did you feel like they got exposed a little bit? How did you view how those guys played and what that could mean for them moving forward?
Yeah, not necessarily. I have heard since then sort of the revisionist, you know, well, the offense is bad, but the defense wasn't good. The defense gave up 19 points. They got no help from their offense. They were put in some third and short and fourth and short situations and were really good in those. They gave up one long drive at the end of the game. Now, they shouldn't have done that, especially against the backup quarterback. But I just don't lay any of this on the defense. You're going to have a few hiccups every game. And Tennessee's defense has played like a national championship defense. Its offense has gotten nowhere near that, especially against good competition. If the offense can figure things out, then this is a playoff team. But I don't think any of that hinges on how the defense has been.
So, Adam, to that point, you've got the Florida game coming up on Saturday. Florida is all sorts of in a mess right now, and they did get a nice win this past weekend. But Billy Napier is firmly in the crosshairs with that team. What do you make of that matchup and, you know, the chances of Tennessee, you know, they're 15.5-point favorites. Do you think this actually could be a significant blowout for Tennessee on Saturday?
I don't know that it'll be a blowout. I mean, I think that line is probably about right. That's probably where I would pick it, a couple of scores. It's funny how the last couple of weeks now the pressure of this game has flipped because it was the question was, is Billy Napier even going to get to Knoxville?
Right.
Like, is he going to be fired before that, or is he going to be fired after he loses to Tennessee? Now it's, you know, the sense you get out of Gainesville is, we'll just see how it goes. We may still fire him, probably still, but let's just let it play out. It's fine. And from Tennessee's standpoint, the sense is more of, you know, Tennessee fans are always going to be nervous of the Florida game. They just kind of need a reason. They don't need a reason, but if you can give them one, they'll feel even more trepidation. And now that the offense is bad, now a lot of fans around Knoxville are thinking, well, this is it. This is what goes wrong. The offense isn't good. We thought it'd be great, but it's not good. And so Florida's going to take advantage of that. I don't think so. I think the offense will be fine. I think they'll fix enough issues. They'll find a game plan that works. Florida, before last week their defense was pretty good against UCF, but their two SEC games before that, they were giving up like 250, 300 yards rushing. So that's all Tennessee needs to do. Just run the ball, and they'll win this game by a couple of scores, as long as they don't turn it over. But, you know, if I would not put Tennessee in the playoff right now. I think they're one of those first few teams out. If they beat Florida and beat Alabama, then they're in. I think they can win out and be in at that point. But they got to win this one, and then beating Alabama, I think, would get them in. Wouldn't necessarily take them out if they lost, but they need to win these next two for sure.
What if they beat Florida and they don't beat Alabama?
I mean, then you've got to you've got to win out, and you've got to win in Athens, which Georgia looks more vulnerable than they have. But that's beating Kirby Smart in mid-November at his home field. That's a tough ask of your team. I think Alabama is the game that you've got to win. You'd be in Neyland. Alabama, obviously, we saw last Saturday, is beatable. So you got to take care of it then, and then try to get to the finish line.
So you win one of those two, Georgia, Alabama, and you win everything else, you think they're solid? Two-loss playoff team.
I think so, because, you know, Oklahoma is looking a little better at this point. So that's going to be a top 25 win, I think, will hold up. If you beat Alabama or Georgia, you've got what would probably be a top 10 win. You know, now Alabama could fall off a cliff, and that doesn't look as good. But I think in the SEC, you're going to have a handful of 9-3 and 10-2 teams. And I think a 10-2 Tennessee probably gets in. I mean, the eye test also would help. If they do finish 10-2, then the offense is going to look better and closer to what we thought, and the defense is still going to be one of the best in the country. So I do think that panel would look at that and say, well, this is a national title contender at 10-2.
Adam, great stuff, man, as always. Appreciate you taking time to be with us, and should be a fun one coming up on Saturday at Neyland. We'll talk to you soon, my friend.
All right, guys. Good to be on.
Adam Sparks. Thanks. From the Knoxville News Sentinel, our guest on Robbie and Rex Road. We'll react to what Adam had to say. Got more of your questions on the Titans to get to as well on our text line. We'll do all that coming up. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.